Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right. You know, one of the subtexts of this year's political race has been our status in the world, especially as it pertains to military action in the Middle East. Syria has become a central theme for Donald Trump, saying that we're losing in Syria, and the Russians are winning, and the Syrians and the Russians, and we could all get together and kick the hell out of ISIS. Wouldn't the world be so much better? You had Gary Johnson not know where Aleppo was, what that meant.
Well, it's one of the central serious issues facing the nation today, but it seems to be suppressed by some of the other stuff that's come out lately.
Right. Billy Bush is somehow taking precedence.
More important.
But now, Frontline. And after 25 years of covering things like this on Frontline, Frontline is tonight debuting Confronting ISIS, which is going to be on PBS and online, by the way, which is the new way that everything gets done. Mm-hmm. It's going to get dropped there. It is premiering tonight. It's a 2-hour special. And it looks at, and this is obviously, this is outside the political realm as in the main, because it looks at what has happened here. What did actually happen in Syria? What struggles were there here in the United States between the Obama administration and the Pentagon? What is actually at play in the Middle East concerning not just Syria, but Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Israel, all the surrounding, Lebanon, all the surrounding countries there, Iraq, Iran. And now, where do we go from here? Martin Smith is with us, and much of this was done by Martin Smith. And Martin, thank you very much. Appreciate your time here. I know you're very, very busy today as you guys are about to hit the air. But
well, thank you for having me on, though.
Let's start with the Obama White House and the Pentagon. They have not agreed in terms of on the strategy here for boots on the ground.
Well, on some points they have agreed, and other points they've disagreed. You know, it's inevitable, I think, when you have a problem as difficult as rooting ISIS out of its strongholds, that you're going to have a lot of debate and discussion. So in some ways that's healthy. But there was real disagreement when it came to figuring out how to dislodge ISIS from its strongholds inside Syria. And that basically comes down to people who say we need to keep this narrowly focused, and that would be the president, just on ISIS, versus those who say you can't get rid of ISIS if you can't settle that civil war, because as long as that war is raging, there will be ungoverned spaces, ISIS will take advantage of those, and we have nothing, no partner in Damascus, in the capital of Syria, to go in there with. So what are you going to do? So a lot of the disagreement was around that part of the strategy.
And I know you also address the conflicting motivations amongst those around the world who'd like to defeat ISIS but may not be on the same page in terms of how they'd like to do it and what they'd like to achieve.
And what that means for them.
They want to replace it with.
Every country in the region has a different set of priorities and sees things very differently. The Saudis see Iran as their primary concern. That's number one on their list. They see Iran intervening in countries like Iraq and in Yemen and in Syria, of course. And so they see it that way. In Turkey, the Turks don't see ISIS as their primary concern. They are more worried about their Kurdish separatists that they've been fighting against for many years. And the United States comes in and says, no, we need these Kurds to help us fight ISIS. And so we have a NATO ally in Turkey, but we're siding with one of their enemies, the Kurds. So it's just much more complicated than you would gather from listening to the sound bites that are coming out of the campaigns.
Yeah, well, that always is the case. This year, it's on steroids because
no question.
And because I have a sense that Hillary Clinton gets a sense of the complexity of it. I do not get the sense that Donald Trump is interested in the complexity of it. He just wants a very simple answer. Just kick the hell out of ISIS. But the question then becomes, who is ISIS? How are they intertwined with the rebels who are on our side there? Who are we actually fighting? How much collateral damage are we willing to put up with as the American people? And not that we'll even see it, because we won't have eyes on it. But certainly the war machine will, and it's up to them. It's up to the men and women at the Pentagon and the men and women who are going to be in the theater of war in that space, prosecuting whatever decisions are made back in Washington or in Alexandria.
It is very difficult because the Pentagon knows very well that to go after ISIS on the ground in Syria and in Iraq, that they're intermingled with local populations. And so you can't just prosecute the war from the air. If you were to go into central Mosul and central Raqqa, their headquarters of their caliphate, and bomb them, you would be taking out tens of thousands of civilians. So they need to have a ground force, and that's where it's become really complicated, especially, as I said, in Syria. Although it's also the case that in Iraq, that country is really severely divided between Sunnis, Shia, and Kurds. And, you know, the overarching problem, as I see it, is that, and what we report, is that you can defeat ISIS militarily eventually. You can rout them out. We're looking probably in an imminent battle for Mosul over the next weeks or months. But what do you do afterwards when these sectarian tensions, these ethnic tensions remain? That's going to take a lot of follow-up, and if we walk away from the situation, we will have left the same conditions that led to the rise of ISIS in the first place. So, you know, we shouldn't be too surprised if it reappears.
Well, and there's another piece too that's important. That, you know, the Russians are playing a game here. It is, everybody's overusing this term this year, three-dimensional chess, but it does describe, I think with accuracy, the complexity of this. Russia is playing a game in our elections, and they're trying to lever the United States because they need us to bend to their will in Syria, because they have doubled down here. They've doubled down in the region because they want to create oil routes to the Mediterranean for their energy exports. It's very important for them because it's key to their economy. They can get out.
Right.
They can get out to the Black Sea, but they would really like to get out to the Med, because they don't know if Turkey's ever going to be stable, or if Bulgaria is going to be stable, or the other places that are on the Black Sea that could potentially go against them. That is why Putin is trying to create, and the geography of Europe and of this Eurasian area is so different than it is in the United States. And you do have all of these different, this is why there has been war there for thousands of years, because there are these conflicting drawn lines, and the Russians are trying to support their own exports here. And that's why Syria becomes so critical. And no one is talking about the fact that that is really what is at essence here, and that the negotiated settlement needs to, A, be with the Russians to go, all right, fine, is that what you really want? Is that all that this is about for you? Because if that is, let's start to have this conversation, because Assad is a bad guy. Supporting Assad is not going to help. Supporting these rebels is not going to help. And then the Kurds, and to your point, Martin, this is critical. The Kurds were our sworn enemies until 2003. You go back to all those John Clancy novels, right? Mm-hmm. Tom Clancy novels
right.
From the 80s. You know, the Kurds were the scary terrorists there, right? Because they were anti-Turk and they were anti-NATO.
They still are to the Turks. I mean, the Turks
right.
still see them as a scary separatist movement that threatens the stability of their country.
Yeah, I mean, you could go back and there are... stories upon stories upon stories about, and they become our friends because they were the enemy of our enemy in terms of Saddam Hussein, and they became very helpful. And then we did all these puff stories about how wonderful the Kurdish political system is in northern Iraq. It's the only thing that actually works. And we supported them. And then the Turks are like, what are you doing? And then in the meantime, while we're doing that, then the Turks all of a sudden, they make a turn to go more Islamist than they had been, because they're starting to get, well, you know, that's the only thing that keeps us from them is going to be strongman politics. And here we go. We find ourselves in the middle
right.
of all of this.
Well,
and my God, what time does this thing air tonight? I've got to see it.
I have to see it too. I'm
No, it's one layer upon another layer of complexity. The Russians, remember the Russians in terms of Syria, that's always been a client state of theirs. So they don't want to let go of their route to the Mediterranean. You're absolutely right on that. But they care less about our focus has tried to get them to focus on ISIS, but they care more about protecting Assad than they care about fighting ISIS. So, you know, they've deceived us. Secretary Carter tells me in an interview very clearly how they lied about their intentions of going in there when Putin told Obama that they were going to go in there and help us fight ISIS. It was a total lie, a total deception. Now they're in there, and you've got Secretary Clinton talking about a no-fly zone, but at this point it's a very hard thing to imagine how we're going to go up against the Russian Air Force and declare a no-fly zone. So things have gotten much more complex than they were. And then you mentioned the Kurds. I really wonder what the Kurds get out of this. They've spilt a lot of blood. They've become very close allies in northern Iraq and in northern Syria. But what do they get out of this in the end?
Martin, can you also, I want to get your take on the WikiLeaks, because one of the things that came out, which really no one's talking about that I've seen, and it's pretty powerful and disturbing even, was that email that came out between John Podesta, Clinton campaign chair, and Hillary Clinton herself. And she says in that email, we need to bring pressure on the governments of Qatar and Saudi Arabia, which are providing clandestine financial and logistics support to ISIL. Here's a former Secretary of State, someone running for president.
I know. I want to look at that more closely, because it's always been well known that sheikhs with deep pockets have supplied ISIS with money and aid and help and free passage and whatever.
Right.
But to say that the governments themselves have been aiding and abetting ISIS is another step.
That she actually uses that word in these emails.
I realize that. Mm-hmm. But that is not what you hear when you talk to people within the administration that were working under her State Department. So I would like to know just what she's going on there. I have asked that question for many years, and I have not found evidence that the governments themselves are supplying ISIS.
Martin,
you know, what are those? They're split. There's a schizophrenia certainly in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
you have at least in the Saudi, in the world of the Saudis, you have so-called progressives, people who would like to move away from the fundamentalist Wahhabist, strict interpretations of Islam that really ISIS is a mirror of, and move in a more secular direction, but.
Because ISIS lives, pardon me for interrupting you, but this is important for Americans to think about. ISIS lives on the message that the great old days are behind us and we need to return to this level of theocracy, this level of attention to what our core principles are. We're going to make Islam great again is basically what ISIS is doing, and we're going to do it through this caliphate because as it says in the Quran, if we are able to take this land, then, this is God's will.
And they're not going to just make it for all Muslims. It's only for Wahhabists, or for Salafist Muslims. I mean, all non-Wahhabi Muslims are in their
infidels,
book.
Yeah.
Even more infidel than Jews and Christians, who they accept as people of the book. So they see Iran, Shia, the Shia of Iraq, they see those people as more infidel than a Jew or a Christian.
So there's a lot here. It's dense, it's confusing, it's very hard to explain in 15 minutes or even in 2 hours, as Frontline is going to do tonight. But it's important, I think, for people to get their head around what is really going on in this region and understand that no matter who wins in November, that this thing is not going away. It is not easily solvable. It is not, let's just kick the ass of ISIS, because that doesn't really work like that. And there's too many other moving parts, at least in Syria, where they have, and Western Iraq, where they have taken up residence. There is, and a lot of these people, I mean, as we're going to see tonight, there are Iraqi military elements in this. There are Saudi elements in this. There are people who we have been there are names we know as a part of this, and that becomes a big issue for us to deal with. And the Pentagon, which is a non-political, theoretically, an apolitical institution, you know, has to make decisions that impact the politics of America. And whoever's leading them has to be respectful that this isn't about politics. This is about military strategy. And that's a there's a big difference there.
That's right. And, you know, you didn't mention the Iranian military that's very involved in Iraq, who's fighting on the same side as we are. And in some of the battles, the battle for Fallujah, the battle for Tikrit, we were rubbing shoulders with the Iranian-backed Shia militia, a very uncomfortable kind of alliance.
Yes.
But in fact, Iran is opposed to the sort of uber Wahhabis, if you will, of ISIS, and so has common purpose with us. So, you know, the enemy of your enemy is your friend, and all of the permutations and combinations of those things that make this area just so damn complex.
And Martin, not dissimilar from the Americans and the Russians sieging Berlin in 1945, right? I mean, we had the same sort of situation. So,
And that turned out not to work out so well afterwards.
But you know, they all had a drink. They met, you know, at the river, right? And they had a drink, and then next thing you know, let's start World War III. All right.
Have a Cold War for 50 years, whatever it was.
Yeah. Frontline tonight. Do not miss it. You can record it. You can DVR it. You can watch it live. You can do whatever it is. But you can also see it online, which is, of course, you know, the revolutionary way the kids are doing this now. Martin Smith from Frontline. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much. You'll see it on Channel 11 tonight. And I don't know, Channel 20 run it too? I don't know.
Lots of ways to watch.
All right.
That guy's been covering for like 15 years in that region. He's like the perfect one to learn from, you know?
There you have it. All right, Tuesdays with Troy coming up. Troy Murray gets us ready for the 2016-17 Chicago Blackhawks. Our beloved will be at the United Center tomorrow. And in advance of that, we'll find out what's on his mind. So, yes, this is a show that goes from the intricacies of Syrian politics to pronouncing names on the ice that no one else can.
Very international today.
Yes, that's what we are. But first, Violetta with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.